Thanks everyone for joining the call at this time. On behalf of all the banks and AGEL, we welcome you to the Adani Green Energy results update. From the company, we have Mr. Phunsuk Wangyal, CFO, and Mr. Viral Rawal, Head Investor Relations. Before I hand it over to Mr. Wangyal, I just want to reiterate that we will have Q&A after the opening remarks by the management. I would request all investors to pose any questions that they have on the Adani Green operations and the results that have come out. If there are any questions which are related to the group or any other questions related to other entities, please feel free to share those separately with the respective bank sales team. With that, I'll hand it over to Mr. Phunsuk Wangyal.
Hi, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Thank you for the banking group for organizing this, and thank you to all the investors for joining this call. So what I will do is I will give a quick update in terms of our performance for 9 months ended December 23. Then post that we can go for Q&A. Just to start, what I thought is just to give an update in terms of capacity. As we know, by December end, now Adani Green, as we stand, we have a legally declared COD of 7.3 gigawatt. Over and above that, as we have spoken last time, actually, we also have a partial commission capacity of around 831 megawatt. So what effectively we mean is today, with a combination of commission and partial commission capacity, we stand at 8.1 gigawatt. And looking at the way our construction is going on, by the end of this financial year, by March end, we should be ending at 8.3 gigawatt, if not more. Now, what it effectively means is, during this period, actually, from Adani Green perspective, what we did was we commissioned the largest hybrid project in India, which is a 1.44 gigawatt actually. That's first thing on the capacity side. Now, from operational performance perspective, operational performance remains robust during this period. From a solar portfolio perspective, on a year-on-year basis, what you will see is our CUF, a plant load factor, has increased by 140 basis point actually. So solar CUF today stands at 24%. This is basically a reflection of high plant availability, which we have managed to achieve, better grid availability, better PR ratio, as well as the integration of SB Energy portfolio during this period. During the same period, as far as wind CUF is concerned, wind CUF was marginally lower by 300 basis point, and this was largely on account of one-off force majeure event of non-availability of transmission infrastructure for 150 megawatt plant in the state of Gujarat. During the same period, you will notice that our hybrid portfolio has got a very robust CUF of 34% actually. This CUF itself really reflects why Government of India, as well as many of the off-takers today, are moving from hybrid type of solution rather than a plain, solar wind solution. This effectively means that during the same period, from a power supply perspective, our revenue has increased by more than 39% actually. And during the same period, we have sold at least 3.8 million carbon credits actually, which effectively has generated 153 CR of revenue on the top of revenue from power supply. Okay. That's one thing. Another thing which I thought of highlighting is on account of the partial commission capacity, which I have talked about. So during the same period, effectively, we have infirm revenue of 1645 CR. This is over and above the revenue from power supply, which you would have noticed in our audit accounts. During the same period, even from a regulatory front, has been very favorable. We got a favorable order from APTEL, which is a power regulatory body in India for our Tamil Nadu projects. Actually, what it effectively means is, we will be able to dispatch the power at a much higher tariff compared to what we were doing now, which effectively means is we will be having a one-time revenue upside of at least 570 CR. Just as a matter of information, this is not yet accounted in the results which we have declared, and this also will lead to a annual recurring positive income of at least 90 CR. Okay, so this is from operational and regulatory front. Now, from our credit update perspective, as you know, a large part of our fleet, at least 89% of our fleet, the counterparties are largely sovereign and sovereign equivalent. This clearly shows that, okay, from a revenue receivable perspective, we stand at a very good state. Even from a rating perspective, if you see the liability profile which we have, at least 97% of our facilities are between A to AAA equivalent credit rating scale. Okay. So effectively, we have got a very robust portfolio growth, excellent operational performance, and from a liability profile which is at a very good rated scale. That's the third point. Now, from ESG perspective, what we also thought of highlighting is, okay, ESG remains a very important pillar for the entire group, and that is also from an AGL perspective. AGL has got a green financing framework, which is basically in line with globally accepted principle, as well as the disclosure standard, which we have voluntarily adopted. During this period, actually, especially for a Q3 period, what you would have noticed is AGL's entire operating capacity is now zero waste to landfill certified. And we are very proud to achieve during this period per se. Apart from that, we also received a leadership award at Sustainability Confer. This is jointly by Frost and Sullivan and Energy Research Institute. So effectively, our ESG commitment, which we have voluntarily adopted in line with global principles, publicly disclosed, are getting recognized at multiple forums. So in conclusion, what I would like to state is, okay, from AGL perspective, we are making very steady progress in terms of providing affordable clean energy in a sustainable basis, and we are effectively today on track to achieve our long-term renewable capacity addition targets in a sustainable and prudent manner. So I will leave my opening remarks. I conclude my opening remarks now, and we can take it forward.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad and remember to unmute locally. For those of you who have joined us online, you can type your question to the Q&A box. Please note that the company team will take questions only pertaining to the business and the company in this call, and all group-related questions can be shared as separate Q&A in response to the group call. Thank you. We will pause for a moment to allow questions to be registered. Our first question comes from Eric Liu from Nomura. Eric, please go ahead.
Thank you. Thanks, management. I think I have two questions at the moment. I think, first of all, join the last session of the Adani Group. So regarding the financing plan about the HoldCo bond, if I recall it correctly, so you mentioned that the full financing plan will be ready around May, June this year, and then 100% cash backing facility will come by the end of June. So I would like to have more detail about how the current stage of a refinancing and who are these kind of lender that giving you sort of a refinancing.
Yeah, hi Eric. Thank you for asking the question. I think in the previous call, what was clarified was, okay, within a year, much before the year of the legal maturity of the HoldCo bond, what we will be effectively be having is an underwritten commitment stroke cashback commitment, actually, to pay out the entire HoldCo facility at the point of its legal maturity. So at this juncture, we are in the process of putting in place maybe those facilities, actually. And as it was communicated in the previous call, by the time annual results are declared, that is towards Q1 of next financial year, we will make the necessary disclosure about what exactly is this underwriting commitment stroke maybe cashback facility.
And if let's say put a percentage of a completion for this kind of progress, how what certain level of milestone you would consider right now you have achieved?
No, I didn't get it, Manuki. Can you just ask again?
Sure. I think my question being asked is that I would like to know about how the current stage, like in terms of milestone of this refinancing, as you mentioned, first quarter, next fiscal year, you probably will give some update, but how the current stage that in terms of maybe some kind of a percentage completion, something like that?
So this is a work in progress, actually, but what Eric, we can assure you is we are more than confident that by the timelines which we talked about, when we make the disclosure, that disclosure will make it absolutely clear that this is an underwritten commitment, which will ensure that by September 24, when this holdco maturity comes up, will be taken out.
Okay, cool. No problem.
Question is about your CapEx. I think last call, Robbie also saying that the group is actually looking for cutting the CapEx. If I recall correctly, in the last Adani Green Equity call, you guided the CapEx for fiscal 24-25 broadly around 100 billion. It was a combination of committed and discretionary CapEx. So would you mind to give us a split in between so-called committed and discretionary? Do you see any headroom of cutting these CapEx?
Yeah. So, okay, as we talked in the last equity earning calls, actually. So this is a tentative capex number which is being talked about, which is still under review, actually. But what I can say is the larger part of this capacity can be in the form of discretionary capex, actually.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Pradeep Malchis from BFAM Partners. Pradeep, please go ahead.
Hello. Yeah. Thank you for this call. I just had a couple of follow-up questions. I guess the first one is in terms of the capacity and also the expected run rate EBITDA. Given that, you know, by the end of this fiscal, we are looking at about 8.2, 8.3 gigawatts. What kind of run rate EBITDA would we look at with this installed capacity for fiscal year 24, and any broad level expectations or guidance that you can give us on in terms of the free cash flow that the business can generate on this capacity for the next fiscal?
So as I mentioned in my opening remark, actually. So sitting today, along with our partial commission capacity, we stand at around 8.1 gigawatt actually. And by the end of this financial year, we're confident of achieving 8.3 gigawatt. What it effectively means is, okay, when we're sitting today, commission and partial commission capacity, run rate EBITDA should be around 7380 CR. And if we add the incremental capacity, which will be added during next 1.5 months, what we should be having is around 7,450 CR of run rate EBITDA.
Got it. And just in terms of free cash, I'm just trying to understand, I mean, broadly in the context of your debt maturities and the refinancing plan, like any guidance in terms of, you know, what kind of free cash flow you're expecting to generate next year?
Yeah, so in next years, if you would have seen our earning presentation, actually, frankly speaking, like, okay, all the repayment profiles are fairly amortizing repayment profile. So from that, like, from that perspective, actually, the first leg of bullet repayment is basically the holdco bond about which we talked about. Now, what it effectively means is, okay, Even looking at around 8.1 gigawatt of current operational portfolio, which we talked about, so we are looking at free cash flow to equity of between 1,600 to 1,800 CR. This is what we are looking at right now, okay. And this is also fairly slightly on a conservative side, actually. But we do believe that maybe this should be that range.
Got it. Thank you. I guess the last question, and I'll step back to the queue. Just on this thought process for, you know, meeting your debt maturities in the next calendar year, obviously, I think for the RG1 CD plan is probably, you know, looking at a longer term financing given that there are operational assets. And can you just, I mean, from a thought process point of view, how are we looking at the refinancing for the Holco bonds? I mean, given that there are no direct access to cash flow and underlying assets are in different SPVs or different vehicles, can you just give us some broad guidance in terms of, you know, the direction that you guys are thinking, and if it's going to be an equity raise or, you know, like looking at some monetization of underlying assets, just for us to, you know, kind of try and understand, you know, what direction you guys are working on.
So, Pradeep, actually, as far as RG1 bonds are concerned, okay, this will definitely be refied through a longer tenor amortizing profile. As was mentioned in the previous call, what effectively we are looking at is around 15-year type of instrument, actually, as far as RG1 bonds are concerned. As far as Holco bonds are concerned, I think the thought process is to have a legal maturity which is more sustainable in nature. Okay? But what will be more prudent is, okay, once it is firmed up, actually, then we should be in a position to talk more in detail. But effectively, the legal maturity for Holco bond will be more sustainable in nature.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Jayadev Mishra from J. Safra Sarathan. Jayadev, please go ahead.
Thank you. Am I audible?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah, okay. So my question is more on the sustainability side. So we are a very, very strongly ESG-focused investor, and that credibility has been brought into question, not only on the debt side, which I'm representing, but also on the equity side. So my question to you is, please bear in mind that you also need to engage different sustainability counterparts, such as, let's say, MSCI or Sustainalytics, just to make sure that they get your long-term messaging right, because without that, also, we are a bit concerned that we may lose some of the fundamental supports from the industry on the sustainability perspective. So that's one. And second is probably on a little bit on the governance front. I read the news about Grant Thornton audit. So is that also covering Adani Green as an entity, and what sort of mindset do you have, or what do you want to achieve? Is it purely a communication perspective, or what do you want to achieve out of such an exercise?
So Jadev, I think what I will suggest is, as far as any query which is broadly linked to issues at the group level, actually, I think it will be advisable that you refer those questions to the banking group, and group will respond accordingly. Now, purely from an ESG perspective, as you know, as I have also talked in my opening remark, actually, AGL continues to remain extremely focused on ESG side, on all three parameters, actually. And if you would have seen the presentations which we have released, you will see that, okay, during the same period, we continued to remain recognized on various fronts, actually. And in the previous call also, which Robbie talked about, that engagements are at various levels, actually, and including the stakeholders who are from a ESG perspective. So from ESG side, Jadev, as far as AGL is concerned, and I can say that is about other Adani Group companies itself, remains a very important area of focus, and you will not find any issue per se on that.
Thank you. That's all from me.
As far as your other question is concerned, I think you can refer that to the banking group, and then accordingly, group will respond.
Understood. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question is from Anton Kokernasov from Pictet. Anton, please go ahead.
Thank you. I hope you can hear me.
Yes, we can hear you.
How do you unmute this? Perfect. Thank you. Two questions. You've got 400 million of short-term debt coming up. How do you plan to address that? And then the second question is, how do you refi the construction loans once the projects are operational?
I think if you are referring to short-term loans pertaining to our non-fund-based facilities, actually, those are taken out through the project finance facilities which are already committed. I guess you are referring to that short-term facility, Anton?
Yeah.
So that's the first thing, actually. Now, from a refi perspective, I think you need to understand that financing base is concerned, actually, it's a combination of domestic sources as well as the construction facility, actually. And as far as domestic sources are concerned, these are fairly long-tenure facility. Long-tenure facility, I mean 20 to 22 years. So from that perspective, there is no refinancing need, actually. A larger part of our portfolio is anyway tied up to long-tenure facilities. Now, in terms of near-term refinancing, as far as next financial year is concerned, as I briefly talked in between, there is no refinancing requirement, actually. Post that, that will be largely in the form of Holdco bond as well as RG1 bond, about which I think we have already given a guidance that we will be having a certain commitment for those in place within next quarter itself.
Okay.
Just to add to that, I think Anupam.
Sorry, go ahead.
On the construction facilities, taking out of the construction facilities, which will come due in 25 and 26, we will be continuing to issue bonds like RG1, like RG2, which are 20-year bonds, which are going to be fully amortizing with no refinancing risk, no rate risk. So that is only the plan on the construction facility.
And I think thanks Anupam for pointing that out. Just to add, actually, as we said, when we come out with our firm plan for RG1 takeout, that will make it absolutely clear that even the construction facilities which will come up for refi in 25-26 will also be refied through a similar type of instrument, albeit maybe for a slightly longer, actually.
Okay, thank you. And if I could just sneak in one final question. You detailed, obviously, the potential capacity additions that you're going to be making this year. Are you disclosing the potential incremental EBITDA improvement as well?
Yes, so our guidance was going to be limited to this financial year, actually. 8.3 gigawatt, which we talked about.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Love Sharma from Lombard Odia. Love, please come ahead.
Hey, hi team. This is really good. Thanks for the call and thanks for some of the comments you've already made. I just had a few follow-up to get some details. So first one, I think what Robbie mentioned on the previous call about the underwriting for the 2024 bonds. Can you just elaborate a bit more? Do we expect some kind of a letter of credit, some kind of a cash collateral to be in place by June 30th to take care of these whole 2024 bonds? That's the first question.
Yeah, hi, Love, actually. As Robbie clarified, okay, so these commitments which will be in place by Q1 will be in firm underwritten commitment in nature, actually. So from that perspective, that makes it absolutely clear.
So can I just ask, would the underwritten commitment supposed to be from the group or from any external party, like maybe a bank or something of that sort? Just to get a sense, I'm not asking about the amount, et cetera, and all that, but just to get a sense, the underwritten commitment is coming from where?
Yeah, so I think, as we spoke, actually, this is a work in progress. But what I can definitely assure is, by Q1, actually, we when we come back to the investor base, What we will be having is a firm underwriting commitment, actually. What it ensures is at September 24, when the Holdco bond comes for maturity, we will be able to draw under that firm underwriting commitment and take out the Holdco bond.
So that sounds like more like a bank facility which you will be able to, which you will be committing to. Is that right?
I think, Love, at this juncture, beyond that, it may not be advisable because it's a work in progress, actually.
Okay, fine. I had another question. I think secondly, was mainly related to the, you know, the construction facility which you have. And I believe there is a step-up clauses there, right? Can you just indicate what kind of pricing you have now and what kind of escalation clauses you have there? And I believe you said the maturity of that facility is in 2025, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, so I think the clauses are more typical in nature, actually. So what effectively we are saying is, okay, these construction facility needs to be taken out in 25-26, actually. And that's the time period for firm takeout, and which we will do. And the takeout will be similar to what we will be doing for RG1 takeout, actually. So from that perspective, as far as takeout is concerned, that is Malika assured me.
Okay, and can you indicate what kind of pricing you are bearing on that now and the quantum of that outstanding? I think if you could just give some ballpark numbers, we'll do also.
What we can say is, okay for these Malika construction facility right now on a fully hedged basis, okay, we have drawn this under multiple tranches actually, should be nearer to around 9.4%, fully hedged facility.
9.4%. Yeah. Understood. And the quantum currently outstanding and how much of capacity you have left, could you just indicate that as well?
Quantum is like if we add both the first construction and second construction, we are talking about around...
Sure.
I think you are asking the entire construction facility which we have drawn. No? So, if we add both of them, we are talking about around 1.64 billion USD.
So that's fully utilized then, I guess.
Yeah, that's fully utilized actually, and capacity is also commissioned. And doing exceptionally well. If you recollect in the beginning, in my opening remark, I talked about 34% CUF for our hybrid portfolio actually. Now, this entire construction facility has been used to finance our hybrid portfolio, which is doing exceptionally well right now.
Wonderful, got it. And then there's a last question. I think for the CAPEX plan for next year, 10,000 odd crores, how is that going to be funded? And I believe, if you look at the cash balance, you know, which has been disclosed, let's say around 2,000-3,000 odd crores, if I remember, what is the plan to fund this CAPEX through debt, equity, internal cash, if you could just break it down?
Yeah, so I think the CAPEX which we are talking about is, as we said, is still under review actually. But a larger part of this CAPEX still remains discretionary CAPEX. From that perspective, actually, if we leave aside the discretionary CAPEX, from a funding perspective, a large part of that is already in place, like a long tenor PF facility.
Long-term facility, that's not the construction facility, I believe, right? You mean another domestic bank-supported facility which is in place for the CAPEX plan?
Yeah, so Love, as I said, we have got a diversified funding base, actually. Construction facility is a one facet of it, but our relationship with domestic institutions, specialized institutions who are very active in project finance space still remains very intact, actually.
Okay. Or maybe if I could ask it another way, let's say if you have to commit to a CAPEX plan based on the current availability of facility from domestic lenders, etc., what would that number be in terms of CAPEX for the entire next year? Let's say you assume no new facilities for construction, etc., and whatever you already have committed, you already have received commitments for, if you just go with that, how much of the CAPEX would you actually spend based on that?
Yes, so I think, Love, what we need to understand is, our limits with our limits with domestic facility is pretty intact actually. And just to put a perspective, for example, the non-fund-based limit which I talked about, as far as non-fund-based facility is concerned, in the past we have talked about, we have got around 89 billion INR of non-fund-based facility, out of which around 60 billion INR is still underutilized. Apart from that, other specialized financial institutions' commitment are still undrawn. So the query is from a perspective that, okay, the capex which we finally crystallize for next financial year, whether domestic institutions will be sufficient to support that, I can say with conviction that they are more than they have their capabilities and undrawn limits are more than sufficient to support it. But as I said in the beginning, actually capex for next year is still a work in progress.
Okay, understood. Okay, maybe I'll follow up later. My query was more about, you know, even if, let's say, you don't get anything in terms of new facility, what would be the bare minimum capex? But I'm happy to follow up later. That's right. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Imtiaz Shafuddin from Barclays. Imtiaz, please go ahead.
Thank you. I just want to, again, try to get some information on something that Robbie mentioned on the earlier call with regards to how you're going to take out the, you know, the RG issue 24 bond. He mentioned 15-year amortizing, which will be privately placed. I know you have answered some earlier questions on this, but can you just please provide some details with regards to, you know, what do you mean by privately placed and when do you expect this to be done? Thanks.
Yeah, hi, Intaj. As we said in the beginning, actually, we will be giving final details about this underwritten commitment by Q1 of next financial year, and that's the timeline which we are talking about. Robbie also talked about the broad amortizing profile. Actually, 15 years is around that level. There may be like, okay, one or two years here and there, but that's the level which we are. That's the amortizing profile which we are talking about.
Okay, in terms of size, are we looking at $1.5 billion? Because that was what was earlier reported. So can you either confirm or deny or on the size of the potential issue?
No, what I can say is RG1 is basically 462 million USD. Okay, so that's the amount of outstanding debt under IRG1, which we plan to refi through this amortizing issuance.
I see. Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Parth Jala from Goldman Sachs. Parth, please go ahead.
Hi, I wanted to check on the gross debt number as of December 2022, and I wanted to check if this includes any under construction debt, basically, you know, for any capacity outside of the 8.3 gigawatt which we are using for run rate EBITDA.
Yeah, so part actually the gross debt number which is there includes all the debt outstanding, actually, including the under construction project. And the gross debt number for December end is 47,890 crore, actually, which includes and from a net debt perspective, this will be 41,522 CR.
Got it. Understood. And this includes, so there is no capex which has been undertaken where, you know, you've taken on some debt, but which is outside of this 8.3 gigawatt. So basically starting April, you'll be literally taking in fresh capex starting 8.3 gigawatt, right? Or at least on the debt side.
No, so I think there are, one or two under construction projects actually, which are right now in advanced stage of completion. Those will not be a part. Those are not a part of 8.3 gigawatt. Those will get commissioned next year actually. The debt of those under construction projects are a part of the number which we just spoke about.
Understood. Okay, got it. That's very clear. Thank you. Secondly, I just wanted to check on the the commitment and the discretionary capex that you mentioned for next year, the 100 billion INR. So you said some of this is discretionary. Now, I just want to understand how this works, because you would have signed some PPAs which would have some CODs in the contract. So those would not be discretionary from your perspective, right? So what would that amount be from a capex perspective, which you are basically locked in FY24, and maybe the remaining would be discretionary, but just want to understand how much would be sort of locked in and how much would be discretionary. And if like a lot of it is discretionary, then just want to understand what mechanisms in the sort of PPA allow that to be discretionary, because typically we've seen you know, some of these to have like a scheduled commission date, etc. So just some color on that would be helpful.
Yeah, sure. So what I can say is a large part of this is discretionary capex, actually. And to your second question of, okay, what exactly discretionary capex means? So, you know, when you sign a PPA, actually, there are obligations on our side. There are obligations which a DISCOM is also supposed to perform, actually. And one of the important element of obligations on the DISCOM side is to have the entire transmission network to transmit the power from my plant to the ultimate beneficiaries. Now, effectively, our approach has always been that to ensure that my plant is connected to the nearest substation, and as you know, from the nearest substation to the ultimate beneficiary area, that is the responsibility of the off-taker. Now effectively, what is happening is many of the projects, actually, as far as the transmission network for the ultimate beneficiary is concerned, those are running behind the schedule. So from our perspective, we have the ability, actually. What we can do is, okay, we can spend the capex, commission our project, connect it to the nearest substation, and sell in firm market. In the beginning, during my opening remark, I talked about 1645 CR of infirm revenue, which we have generated it. So that's what it is. Okay. So discretion is our end to ensure that, okay, either I do the capex, connect it to nearest substation, sell it in the infirm market till the time the transmission evacuation ecosystem to be developed by ultimate beneficiary is in place. So that's how this discretionary nature of capex comes into play. Hope it clarifies part.
Understood. That's very helpful. Just to clarify, the 1645 million of infirm revenue is for the 9 month 23 period, right?
This is 1645 CR, actually, and this is for the 9 month period. So effectively, what's happening is, okay, this partially commissioned capacity of 831 megawatt, which I talked about, it's still generating revenue, actually. But it's not getting reflected in my P&L. Okay. So that's why you will never see this 1645 CR in my P&L.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Uma Mansour from PGIM. Uma, please go ahead.
Hi, and thank you for taking the time to do this call. Another question about the governance aspect, specifically relating to the Adani Green share pledge, which I appreciate that this is beyond the scope of this immediate entity, but my question is about the fact that the pledge of these of the Adani Green shares that was reported by the SBI Cap trustee as having supported a loan to the Carmichael mine in Australia. So effectively utilizing a green company's shares to back a loan to a coal mine. Obviously that massively impacts the impression of the sustainable rating of the company and could potentially impact Sustainalytics or whoever. So my question is, have you discussed this with any of these outside environmental rating agencies in terms of trying to mitigate the impact or potentially putting a governance structure in place to prevent this from happening in future?
I'll take that question, Anupam Desai. I think we are going through that process right now as we speak, and that structure and process will be in place so that this is mitigated in the future. With respect to the discussions with rating agencies, not really credit, but also the ESG rating agencies, I think SIMSOC has already clarified, but this is an important commitment for us. We are fully committed to this, and we are continuing to engage with all of them. We're doing it before the volatility period also, but even during this, I would just say that the engagement has been heightened.
Okay, great. So in terms of actual sort of, are there any changes to the governance framework that you're sort of communicating to them? Are they sort of comfortable with the changes that you're making?
So all of these, as I said, they are private discussions ongoing right now. But as I said, as and when these reports come out, we will make them public. But, for us, it's been a period where it's been heightened as well as intense learning over the past, say, 10, 15 days. But all of these mechanisms, et cetera, are being put in place. Discussions are ongoing. We have communicated to them. And when we make the announcements, you will see for the reasons. What we're going to do also is that every quarter will have calls. And as Bobby mentioned on his earlier call, that we will engage proper investor India and continue to engage a lot more. So you'll be getting these announcements directly from us, but also you will be hearing from us. So we will be communicating to you step by step, how all of these actions that we are taking, how they're taking effect.
Okay, wonderful. That's really helpful. In terms of the ESG funds and everything, that's very useful to have that information. And just I have one other question, which is more about the holding company, the cash flows to the holding company. Would you, because of the fact that there's a Total JV on one side, would it be possible to give us an estimate of what kind of cash flow you're expecting into the holding company from the Total JV and from the outside of Total JV assets in terms of dividend cash flows into the holding company, so that we can sort of have an idea of how much cash flow is available for just normal debt servicing at the holdco over the next 12 months or the FY24 or whatever projected period that you're using.
Yeah, I think before, while Kunshuk rejoins, I think he had mentioned that we are looking at a free cash flow to equity. That is after all the operating level cash is serviced, operating level debt and O&M is serviced. And on top of that, the Total JV share is paid out. I think that number he had mentioned is around 1,800 crores on the, and that too was on a conservative basis. So that is the kind of number I think we have. I think out of that 1,800 crores, around 600-700 crores would come from the Total JV, and the balance would be from the other operating assets.
Yeah, hi. Sorry, apologies. We just got dropped out actually. So we are back. Okay. So I think if I recollect correctly, the last query was, at AGL level post Total share, actually, what exactly will be the free cash flow? Because that I think that was the question, no, last time. Yeah. So, look, actually, the number which I mentioned in the beginning, free cash flow, actually, purely from 8.3 gigawatt, the number which I talked about, which was 1,600 to 1,800 CR, actually, that was after factoring distribution to Total. So that's the number, guidance number, which we are talking about.
Okay, so the 600 to 700 is coming from the Total JV, and the balance is coming from the fully owned assets, the ex-SoftBank and other assets. Is that correct?
Yeah, so for sure, I think the question that they had in addition to this was, out of this 1,600 to 1,800 crores, how much is your share of the total JV and how much is the balance?
Yeah, sure. So total share should be around 20-25% actually out of this one. Okay, just 1 second. I think I'm just.
Yeah, so I think the number I gave you of 600 crore, maybe a little inflated, that number would be probably in the range of around 400 to 450 crores. And then the balance.
Yeah.
So that is what is coming from the total JV and balance is from the other operating assets.
Yes.
Okay. Got it. So the 1,600 to 1,800 crore number was including the full 600 from the Total JV. But you're saying that 20 to 25% of that 600 will actually go to Total. Is that what you're saying?
No. What we are saying is the 1,600 to 1,800 crore includes around 400 to 450 crores, which is our share of the Total JV.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it. Understood. Thank you.
Thank you. We have a written question from Runak Majumdar from Bank of America, who asks, could you clarify discretionary CapEx? How could you walk away from this CapEx requirement?
No, so we are not saying that we will walk away from this CapEx requirement. What we are saying is because under a contractual document, there are obligations on both the parties actually. So my requirement to fulfill my obligation within a certain time period is dependent upon off-taker fulfilling their obligation. A large part of it is setting up the transmission network from the substation where my plant will be connected to the area where the power needs to be delivered upon. So in many of our projects, actually, what we are going to be seeing is the transmission infrastructure is going to be delayed at the off-taker level. So from that perspective, we can defer the CapEx. That is what we are seeing as discretionary CapEx. Ronak, I hope it clarifies it.
Thank you. We have another question who asks, any plan to buy back the bonds, especially the September 2024 bond, since it is trading at deep discount?
From our perspective, we have already clarified it.
Just to clarify, the September 2024 bonds, as per RBI regulations, we cannot buy back because it's a 3-year maturity bond, and in CD issue, the 3-year maturity cannot be bought back. So therefore, it is not possible to do a buyback there regulatory. But we have already clarified the plan that we have on that bond. And there
Thank
are
you.
No plans to buy back either the RG1 or the RG2 bonds. They are self-liquidating long-term structures. RG1 will be refinanced and RG2 will not be touched. It will remain as is.
Thank you. Another question asked, regarding the solar CUF improvement, could you be more granular of that improvement between RG1, RG2 and other assets?
Yeah, so these are anyway disclosed as a part of our compliance certificate on a half yearly basis. Actually, if any further information is required, we shall be like happy to be provided separately.
Thank you. The next question asks: can you discuss the progress of refinancing the RG1 OpCo bonds? Is the placement of the 15-year instrument completed, or can you give some more color on the progress of having the facility completion?
As you said, actually, so we will be having a firm commitment in place by Q1 of next financial year, actually. So it's a work in progress, but we are fairly confident that by the time our annual result is declared, we will be having firm commitment in place by the time.
Thank you. Another question asks, how much CapEx remains to put the 8.1 GW operational by March 2023?
A large part of this is already incurred, actually. If you really want to look at it, what we are seeing is between 650 to 700 CR, that's the amount of CapEx which we are talking about. Because these portfolios, as I said, out of this 8.1 gigawatt is actually operational. It is basically for the balance 200 megawatt, which I said will get, which likely to add to this 8.1 gigawatt, that is where the balance CapEx will be.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Luke Chower from Pictet. Luke, please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, good evening. Thank you very much for the presentation for the Q&A. Could I just check, since a lot of the questions have been answered, could I just check that in the most recent presentation still, do you still have a target of 45 gigawatts of capacity by 2030? Can we achieve the 20 gigawatts, you know, the lock-in growth in the next few years as well? So, and are these contingent, and it seems to me it, they are, on getting CAPEX. So if you do have CAPEX being defined as discretionary, I know, which is not dependent on the off-taker, how much of this growth in the capacity is not right now in place? Maybe I should ask it the other way around. Thank you very much. And you know, very good results again, and also to your colleague, Mr. Robinson, earlier. Thank you again for that.
Thanks, Luke. Look, as you said, the CapEx numbers are still under review, actually. And so effectively what it means is, okay, when the capacity is also getting reviewed intrinsically as a part of CapEx review. Once that is going to get firmed up, I think we should be in a better position to comment on it.
So can I just clarify then?
But I can.
The 45 target in 2030 is not is a, how do you call it?
Sorry, I'll just add to it. No, sir, I'll add to that. I think what Poonsook mentioned. Yeah, what Poonsook mentioned on the CAPEX. I think the near-term CAPEX numbers are something that we are working on the next 12 to 18 months. The longer-term targets remain. The longer-term targets. There have been no changes to the longer-term targets. We continue to maintain that with respect to 2030, we are looking to add a 45 gigawatt renewable capacity. That means that is our commitment with respect to renewable power capacity addition in India as well as in our portfolio. With respect to the funding mix and the funding means of that, it will be largely lot more equity funded. And the proportion of debt will go down. And in the near term, there will be a slowdown in the target. And that is what was mentioned in the sense that we are going to revisit our discretionary CAPEX and reduce our CAPEX in the near term, that is the next 12 to 18 months. So that is the guidance that I can give you. And right now, there is absolutely no rethink on the 45 gigawatt by 2030.
Okay, no, thank you very much. I look forward to further guidance on your ambitions there. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Manik Gupta from Broadpeak. Manik, please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for this call, gentlemen. The first question is, you mentioned you have $462 million on the RG1 box. Our understanding is $500 million. What am I missing? What's the mismatch? Unless you've got that sum?
Oh, sorry, it's 500 million. I think there was some confusion in the numbers earlier. It's 500 million. Archie was 500 million. Mm-hmm. I think we had, okay. We were talking about the number net of DESRA, and therefore the 460 number came, but the number is 500 million.
Yeah, absolutely.
The second question is more kind of a description request. Can you just describe, other than the two RGs that sit under the Total JV, can you describe how much is the other capacity? Is it all operating? How much debt is against it? And how much EBITDA does it generate?
Yeah, so just 1 second. So as we said, right now the operational capacity, including part commission, is 8.1 gigawatt actually, and under the total JVA and hello.
Yeah, sorry, I meant the total JV.
So under total JVA, we had around 2.3 gigawatt actually. And for that, 2.3 gigawatt, the debt is, yes, 1 second. I just need to cross-check my numbers actually, but Manik, I will get back to you with the exact details.
Sure, I'll connect with you separately. Thank you so much.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Imtiaz Shafuddin from Barclays. Imtiaz, please go ahead.
Thanks. Just one more question, seeking clarification on your gross debt number. If I look at your credit note that was presented a couple of days ago, the debt maturity profile for Adani Green Energy totals up to something like $437.6 billion. The gross number that was mentioned earlier on this call was slightly different. Can you just help clarify these numbers?
So gross debt number, which I have talked actually, is 47,890 crore actually, and this also includes some of the trade credits instruments which we have, which is basically 16,057. So it is inclusive of the trade credit numbers.
Sorry,
this is on, and just to clarify, this is December end number.
Yeah. So the your credit note also had the December end number for the debt maturity profile, and that totaled up to 437.6. So now you mentioned that your gross debt number is 478.9, and that includes your trade credits. Can you just repeat how much is your trade credit numbers?
Number is 1657. Actually. So I think, and just to clarify, actually. Okay. You also need to take into account the cash and bank balance, which we have is 4711. Okay, my sense is, if you add 47890 minus 4711, 43179.
Sorry, this is a gross debt number in your debt maturity profile. Why would your cash balance matter in this debt maturity profile?
So what we will do is we will get back to you separately on this actually. But maybe,
okay.
Yeah. Fine. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you.
Yeah. So I think the difference will be the total instruments. Maybe they may be counted as debt in one number and not in another. So, but we will just clarify this separately over email.
Great.
Yeah. Sure.
Thank you.
The second thing is, if you add everything, it is only till FY45. Some of the maturity is beyond 2045. Because what we've assumed here is that the construction facility is not shown as due in, you see the footnote, the construction facility is not shown as due in FY25 and 26. It is assumed to be refinanced with a tail period of 5 years. So therefore, you will see that some of it could just push beyond 2045 as well.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. We have a written question from Kevin Collins from Pacific Life, who asks, regarding the private placements planned at AdGreg, will this be underwritten by banks? Will the deal be broadly distributed, or are you approaching key financing partners?
It will not be underwritten.
We have...
I'll just take this. It will not be underwritten by banks. It will be an approach to our key partners. And in addition to that, we will look to do, the first two deals that we do, we'll try to do with more with the relationship, investors, and then try to broad-base this product. We eventually want to have a very broad-based, like we have in the 144 editor, as we available to reach out to a larger base of direct placement investors and focused on US, but then again looking at other parts of the world as well. That's the next 3 to 4 year plan for us. So the first few deals will be more chunky, held by a few investors, and then going after that will be widely distributed.
Thank you. Our next written question is from Tae Ho Lee from MetLife, who asks, for the expected financing for the future maturities, how much higher interest should investors expect? Is there any change to the longer-term capacity target in light of the group's efforts on cutting CapEx?
So I think what we can say is, we don't expect the interest rate to be higher compared to what we have secured recently. If you even see in the domestic market, you will see that the interest rate which many of these specialized financial institutions are offering are broadly in line with the average interest rate which we have. So on a broader basis, we don't expect any increase in interest rate from the incremental capex which will come up in near terms.
Thank you. Our final text question is from Matthias Pence from Haliba Invest, who asks, with the end of this financial year, almost 6 GW of operational assets will be outside the total JVRGs. Is there a plan to add an additional assets for JV with total or create additional RGs which issue their own bonds?
Yeah, so total JV right now is 2.3 gigawatt act. Yeah, okay.
The total JV is going to be a closed-ended JV with 2.3 gigawatts. There are no further conversations right now for dropping any further assets into that platform. With respect to the additional assets which are sitting under Adani Green, the future issuances on the bond side will be exactly replicating RG2, which is there will be 20 to 22 years amortizing bonds with no rate risk, no refinance risk, and they will be in a structure which will be, we'll pool the assets together in a structure which will have at least 75% to 80% coming from sovereign equivalent counterparty and the balance from non-sovereign equivalent or merchant projects. So that is the combination that will be there for our portfolio going forward from the bond perspective.
Thank you. That is now the end of the Q&A session, so I'll now hand you back over to the management team for closing remarks.
Yeah, so I think thank you to the Bankers Group. Thank you to investor for the call. In case you have got any one of the further queries, you can either approach the banking group or Viral, who is there on the call. You can approach us. We will be happy to respond to any further queries. And thank you for continuously supporting the group per se. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.